This week is Parashat Ekev, and Ekev includes a lot of big things. It is, in a sense, an expansion on the prohibition of Avodah Zarah, carries through much of the parasha. But famously, Ekev nearly ends with the parasha Vayayim Shamua, which is, as we know, at the second paragraph of Kriyat Shema. It is matched with the first paragraph of Kriyat Shema because it includes the mitzvot of tefillin and of teaching your kids and of mezuzah. And I want to focus on mezuzah, and it's going to give us an opportunity to branch off into an area that we rarely get to deal with, but which is a lot of fun in and of itself. So as you see here, and we're looking at the passage about mezuzah in Vayetchanan, in last week's parasha. And you see the way that it's written in our Sifrei Torah, Uchtavtam al mezuzot beitecha uvisharecha. And I want to focus only on one word. The whole shiur is about one word, and that word is mezuzot. So when you think about it, how can you write mezuzot? How many different ways are there to write mezuzot correctly? I don't mean a tet at the end or something else. To write it correctly in Hebrew. And the answer is that there are four different ways to write it. Why is that? Because you have two vowels here which allow for a movement, meaning there are three vowels, mezuzot. But the first vowel, which is a shva na, there's nothing to play with. It's a shva, and you're not going to put anything afterwards. But the two following vowels, which are an u and an o, can be left what we call chaser, which would mean the way that evidently Ivrit was originally written, which is only using letters as consonants, and therefore you would write it mem, zayin, zayin, tav, and the vowels would be essentially what we call baal peh, an oral tradition of how to read the word. Alternatively, you could write it in the absolute fullest way to write, which would be mem, zayin, vav, tav, mezuzot. Now, to clarify what we're talking about, and as you take a look at it, by the way that our Sifrei Torah are written, if you take a look at source 2, in our Parsha Ekev, it's written completely full, male, male, which is mezuzot. That's how it's written, with six letters. Now, important to note, as I mentioned, that Ivrit originally was only used letters as consonants, so that early on, the way you would write shalom would be shin, lamed, mem. That's it. And if you wrote shimon, lamed, vav, mem, you would pronounce it something like shalavam. The vav is a consonant, a vav sound. What happened over the course of time, and evidently this began towards the end of Bayit Rishon and in Galut Bavel, is the introduction of what we refer to as Amot Kriya. Amot Kriya, its proper term is a Latin term, matres lectionis, which really means mothers of reading, means using letters in Hebrew as vowels. And that was really an innovation. And the idea was to use a vav to represent either an O sound or an U sound, a yod to represent either an E sound or an A sound, and occasionally also an aleph or a he to represent an A sound. So for instance, how would you write the word aromimcha in absolutely chaser writing, meaning in using letters only as consonants? You would write aleph, resh, mem, mem, chaf, right? Aromimcha. How is it written in our Tehillim? So it's written aleph, resh, vav, mem, mem, chaf, right? So there's one letter in there that has no consonantal sound, and that's the vav, arom mimcha. However, if you look into the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Psalm scroll, it's spelled aleph resh vav mem yod mem chafei. In other words, every vowel gets a letter that's used to vocalize the word. And this is a trend, something that developed during the between Galut Bavel and then Bayit Sheni, and then really reached its apex sort of in that period at the end of Bayit Sheni, when words were written with full vocalization, meaning every vowel had a letter to represent it, or most of the vowels, And this came just really as a response to the difficulty in maintaining an oral tradition. Question is, what happens when you take a look at a Sefer Torah and it's written one way, but you find comments by commentators that pick up on it being written a different way and draw conclusions from it? We'll see an example actually right now. I'm going to go to this source right here, which is Rashi. As you see in source 9, we're going to go back to the earlier sources in a minute. In source 9, again, in Vayetchanan, Uchtavtam al mezuzot beitach al bisharecha. That's the way it's written in our Sifrei Torah. If you find a Sefer Torah where it's written Mem Zayin Zayin Tav, or Mem Zayin Vav Tav, or Mem Zayin Vav Zayin Tav, anything but this way, it is pasul. And yet, look what Rashi says here in his commentary. Mezuzat ktiv. In other words, the way Rashi reads it, the vav is after the second syllable, not the third. Or is the second syllable, not the third. And he learns something from it. She'ein tzarich ela al ha'achat. Meaning, go back to the pasuk. Uchtavtam al mezuzot. What does mezuzot mean? The doorposts. Where are the doorposts? On this side and on that side. So you might think that you have to write the words of the mezuzah, the words of Shema, on both sides. Rashi says, no, you only have to write it on one side, Hal, because it's written mezuzot, but without a vav towards the end. So therefore, it could be read mezuzat in the singular, and therefore it's only written on one doorpost. And here we have a little bit of a problem, which is, Rashi is commenting on a particular style of writing the word mezuzot from which he derives a halacha, which we know is the halacha. You only write it on one of the doorposts, not both. But he's getting it from a reading that if we had in our Sefer Torah, we'd say it's possible. So how do we deal with that? So I want to show you something here, just for fun, but everything we do is Rashi, as you know, lived, prospered, wrote his prodigious things, and passed away well before the era of the printing press. And therefore, everything of Rashi was in Ktav Yad, in a manuscript. And the first 400 years or so, the first almost 400 years of Rashi's study was done from manuscripts. Parenthetically, Rashi was so popular. How popular was he? Rashi was such a popular commentary that the very first Hebrew book published, and as you know, at the advent of the printing press, Hebrew books way outnumbered non-Hebrew books relative to the population. The very first Hebrew book published was somewhere around 1470, was Chumash with commentary of Rashi. We have extant nearly 250 Kitvei Yad manuscripts of Rashi's commentary. Just to put that into a picture, how many manuscripts do we have of the Rashbam? One. How many manuscripts do we have of the Talmud Yerushalmi? One. We have fragments here and there, but one. We have, I believe, two Kitvei Yad of the Bechor Shor's commentary. And then when it comes to Rashi, we have over 250 extant manuscripts. And by the way, these manuscripts are not 100% identical. And that's for another shiur, but just to whet your appetite. What is considered to be the finest manuscript of Rashi's commentary is the 13th century manuscript, which is commonly marked as Leipzig 1. It's in the Leipzig Library. It's Leipzig number 1. It's there. And this is what a page of it looks like here in source 8. You can see it, the text in the middle. On one side, you have Unklus. On the other side, you have Rashi. And now this last little comment, if you see the little bit of writing that's way too small to read in the left-hand corner, I enlarged it. And what you could see here is he's commenting on Rashi's comment of Rashi. This is the copyist, not Rashi. And he makes the comment that in our Sifrei Torah, it says mezuzot mem zayin zayin vav tav, which, by the way, puts a real hink into Rashi's comment. Now, there's two ways for us to go with this. One is the halachic issue, which is, can we now find justification for writing the mezuzah on only one doorpost if our ktiv is different than that? And that's one direction to go. The other direction to go is, how do we cope with the fact that Rashi himself is testifying to an orthography, meaning the way that the word is written, which is different than ours. So for that, I want to go back. I'd like to go back to source 3, which is parallel to source 4, which is going to be the beginning of an inquiry, which I promise you we will not get to the end to because, by the way, nobody's gotten to the end of. But it will bring up valuable observations of Chazal regarding this particular phenomenon, as you will see. This starts with the Sifri. The Sifri is the Midrash Tanaim on Sefer Devarim, almost at the very end. Anybody here who's a Baal Kriya or who has ever auctioned and won Chatan Torah knows the words Me'ona Elohe Kedem. Me'ona Elohe Kedem is the end of the Bracha of Moshe, and it is the beginning of the Aliyah that we call Chatan Torah. There's 3 psukim there, Me'ona Elohe Kedem, and then Vayal Moshe, the last parak. Me'ona Elohe Kedem. The Midrash tells the following story. Shlosha Sfarim Nimtzu'um Ba'Azara, which means in the Azara, in the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash, they found 3 Sfarim. Now that means that this story goes back to the times of the Mikdash. Important to note, and this is, by the way, not unique to us, but we are very familiar with it from our own background, the code of law was always kept in the holiest place. That's why it's not surprising when you study about ancient Near East culture to find that the Luchot were put into the Aron, which was in the middle, because that's where you keep them. It was kept there for 2 reasons. One, because of the sanctity, but also it became the reference text. And if anybody ever had a disagreement about what it said, you pull it out from there. Here, we find that the Azara had 3 Sifrei Torah. Now, by the time this is happening, there are no more Luchot. Luchot, we don't know where they are. They're gone since near the end of Beit Rishon times. But there are 3 Sifrei Torah in the Azara, which should be the Arkshmat models, the paradigmatic Sifrei Torah. However, watch this. Echad shel Me'onim, one of the Sifrei Torah had a name. It was called Sefer Me'onim. Echad shel Hihi, one of the call was the Hihi Sefer. Sounds funny, we'll get to it in a minute. Echad nikra Sefer Za'atutim, right? 3 weird names. Why did it have these names? Because Be'echad k'tiv Ma'on Elohe Kedem. One of them, in our Pasuk, didn't say Me'ona Elohe Kedem, it said Ma'on Elohe Kedem. Right? The other 2 had the way that we're familiar with. So what did Chachamim say? We paskin like the 2. The psak is that the proper writing is Me'ona because Rov, and therefore Ma'on is out, which means, by the way, Sefer Me'onim was a Sefer Pasul, according to Halacha. Right? Next. Be'achad k'tiv tish'ahi, uvishnayim k'tiv achad esrei. How do you spell the word he in Hebrew? Hey, Yod Aleph, right? How do you spell the word he in Tanakh? Usually,
hey, Vav Aleph.
Vav Aleph, and occasionally there's a Yod. So in one of the Sfarim, there were only 9 he's spelled with a Yod. In the other 2, there were 11, the same 11, meaning the consistent 11. And the other one, 2 of them were written with a Vav, and only 9 were written with a Yod. What happened? Therefore, they called it Sefer Hihi, meaning the one that was missing 2 he's. So that Sefer became Pasul, and they ruled in favor of the other 2, one of which, by the way, was Pasul, Ma'ona, Ma'on, and they said the rule is 11. And now, that is in Mishpatim, in Shmot Chaf Dalet, when Moshe has the Korban at the foot of Har Sinai, just before he goes up to the mountain. In our text, it reads, Vayishlachen na'arei b'nei Yisrael, en ve'al atzilei b'nei Yisrael lo shalach yado. But in the one Sefer, it said instead of those 2 variant words, it said za'atutin, in both cases, za'atutei. And therefore, bidlu chachamim etachad bikimu etashnayim. So Chachamim said, za'atut is out, na'arei and atzilei is in. And that, by the way, check your Sefer Torah, you will not find the word za'atut anywhere there. And you will find Na'are and Atzile in our Sifrei Torah. Parenthetically, the Yerushalmi and Tani tells the same story with a slight variation only in names. So Shasfari Matsu Ba'azara, Sefer Me'onai, Sefer Za'atute, the Sefer He. So slightly different names. Bechad Matsu Katub Me'on Eloi Kedem, right? And then Mechagti Vashlach Zatu Te Bnei Yisrael, it only quotes the one in Na'arei Bnei Yisrael, and Vechai Katuv Teshahi Vishnam Katuv Achanasarhi, etc. And the same result, which means, by the way, going all the way back to the times of the second Mikdash, we had variant readings, and Chachamim had to rule on which is the proper reading and which is, therefore, if written differently, makes a Sefer Torah Pasul. And they did it simply based on the evidence and Rove. These are the three super Svarim, whichever two rule like, which, by the way, has an echo, if you think about it, in the introduction of the Shulchan Aruch, where he writes that he has a Beit Din. And who's his Beit Din? The Rif, the Rosh, and the Rambam. If they disagree, whatever two of them rule, that's the ruling. Right? Typical Beit Din. So here, the same thing. We jump ahead several hundred years to Bavel in the beginning of the 4th century. And this is following the passage in the Gemara that says, How many psukim there are in the Torah? How many psukim there are in Tehillim? What's the middle pasuk in the Torah? What's the middle letter in the word in the Torah? What's the middle word letter in the Torah? All right, the Vav of Gachon. So by Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef then asked the question: Vav de Gachon, mehai gisa, mehai gisa? Because when you say something is the middle letter, so if there's an odd number of letters, that becomes easy. You have an X amount of letters before it, the same X amount of letters afterwards in the middle. But if you assume an even amount of letters, then to say something's the middle letter means it's either the last of the first half or the beginning of the second half. So Rav Yosef asked, the Vav of Gachon that we have a tradition is the middle letter of the Torah. By the way, when you open up a Sefer Torah and you count letters, it's not even close. But if he was asking, is it part of the first half or the second half? Amrule, so the student said, Nete Sefer Torah v'ininu. Let us bring a Sefer Torah and we'll count it. Now, of course, Rav Yosef can't do that because he's blind, if you recall, but the student said, we'll bring out a Sefer Torah, we'll count them. Milo Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, don't we have a tradition going back one generation to Rabba Bar Chana, two at most? Lo Zazu Misham Achivio Sefer Torah Na'um, meaning there was a dispute about amount of letters somewhere and they brought a Sefer Torah and counted them. Amar Lahu, so what did Rav Yosef say to his students? And it's Rav Yosef. This is not Achronim, there's not Rishonim, there's Rav Yosef in 4th century Bavel. Says, Inu biki b'chaserot v'yeterot. They knew chaserot v'yeterot, which means they had an expertise and an expert tradition on the orthography of the Torah. Do you write Otam, Aleph Vav Tav Mem, or Aleph Tav Mem? By the way, it's written alternatively in the Torah, sometimes this way, sometimes that way, right? And they were experts in Chaserot V'Yeterot, Anan Lo B'Ki'inan, which means, Rav Yosef saying, if you take out our Sefer Torah and count, you're not going to get to an accurate place anyways, because we have no idea if the amount of letters in our Torah is correct, because we're not experts in Chaser V'Yater, right? Now, this becomes a problem in light of this passage in the Rambam. It's intuitive to us, but just to see it black on white, Aval in Katavim Aleichas, this is the Rambam Hilchot Sefer Torah in Perek Zayin, where he identifies all of the desiderata of a Sefer Torah and all of the sine qua non, meaning all the things that ideally on a Sefer Torah, and then all the things that absolutely must be there, and if they're not there, it's invalid. He says, Avim Katav Hamalei Chaser, or Chaser Malei. So let's say that you have a Ketivan Kri, right? And you wrote it like it's read, but not like it's supposed to be written. In other words, in the Tochacha, in Kitavo, which we'll hear in a few weeks, what does it say in the text? It says Yishgalena, which is a vulgar word. We read Yishgavena. So if you wrote Yishgavena, over at Chorim, Bimkom Apolim, it's also in those psukim, with the hemorrhoids and the plague. If you took a parsha p'tucha, like the second day of creation, it's supposed to be on a new line. If instead you were to put it on the same line as Kitov and skip a few spaces and make it stuma, or vice versa, katava shira kishar ktava. Let's say you wrote Shirat Hayam or Shirat Moshe, as a regular text, just going across without the spaces and the elaborate graphic layout, or you wrote the beginning of Breishit like a Shira with spaces and all of that, Hare ze pasul. The Rambam says the Sefer Torah is pasul, which means there's two things here. The orthography, which letters go in, and, of course, the form are all vital and will determine the sanctity of the Sefer Torah and the validity of it. Vein bo kedushat Sefer Torah klal, elek chumash binakumashin, tim benatino kod. You could use it as a sefer to teach. You use it's like a sefer you write to teach kids. It's a chumash, but it's not a sefer Torah. It does not have kedushat sefer Torah. Okay. Parenthetically, in the sugya melachot, we have also mention of chaserot and yeterot, and it's clear from here that chaserot and yeterot have to be fixed. I'm going to show you what I mean here. Amar le by Rav Yosef, yid le by Ahu daf shalosh ta'uyot mai. Meaning, if there's one daf, one column, or one actually sheet of the parchment that has three mistakes, the question is, can it be fixed? Fixing a sefer. Meaning, it can be fixed. So therefore, because based on the rules, you can fix it. That's only if it's chaser. Meaning, but if it's yater, meaning that there's an extra letter there that shouldn't be there, or vav that shouldn't be there, then it's not a problem. Chaserot my tamalo. Why can't you do chaserot? Because if, let's say, you have an extra vav in there, and then you erase it, then the letters look spotted, whereas it's easy to kind of sneak in a letter. Point is that in this discussion, it's clear to them that a chaser and yeter actually have to be fixed. Now, if you take a look, and we just want to move further ahead, in the 16th, 17th century, Yeshaya Yedidia Nortzi in Italy wrote a book, which is a commentary that we have on Chumash called Minchat Shai. The Minchat Shai, which some people are very familiar with, some people never heard of. By the way, you can access this very easily on the Mikra Gedolot al HaTorah. Minchat Shai is an invaluable volume, which helps us with exactly this issue of how the proper spelling in a Sefer Torah should be. And he comments on the word mezuzot, where it first shows up. Where's the first place mezuzot shows up? It shows up in Shmot, where? In the context of the Korban Pesach. He put the dam al shtei ha-mezuzot. Right? And now he writes, Kol mezuzot deve'ele shmot chaser vav batra'a umale vav kadma'a. All the times that it says mezuzot in Shmot, in the book of Shmot, the second vav is missing and the first vav is there. Exactly like it's spelled on this page. Mezuzat, as it were. Vatzlata inu, b'hai parsha, debo, u'dishma Yisrael chaser vav kadma'a umale vav batra'a. And the one in Shema Yisrael, meaning in Vatchanan. There's only three times it says mezuzot in the Torah. Once here, Pesach. Once in Shema, once in Vayim Shemua. So the one in Shemot is Vav and then not Vav. In Shema Yisrael, it's not Vav and then Vav. Not like Rashi. And in Vayim Shemua, it's Vav and Vav. Exactly like we have it. Right? And then he comments on Rashi. Right? Katav Rashi Zal Mezuzaktiv She'en Tzarich El Achat. That's the Yom Mizrahi, the famous commentator on Rashi. So Masorah Tamasorah, B'dibur Chamishi, B'shem HaGemara, Rashmatzinu Pamim Rabot, Shagmara Choleket Ala Masorah Shalanu. This is a fabulous line. Look what it says. And this, by the way, a very famous tshuva of the Rashba in the Miuchasot. And he says, often we will find that the Torah, that the Gemara, in the Midrash sometimes, but the Gemara will identify a particular form of spelling and learn something from it, and it's different than the way our Sefer Torah are spelled. And this is itself a point of great conflict. How do you rule? Gemara versus what we call Masorah, the Masoretic reading. It goes against the Gemara. How do we rule? And by the way, the overwhelming consensus of the poskim is we follow the Masorah. So you will often find a drasha in the Gemara, and if you follow it through, a drasha in the Gemara that hinges on a particular nuance of spelling, and you check in the Sefer Torah, and it's not spelled that way, you'll find that that's because we're following a Masorah, and it's actually against the way the Gemara. And the Gemara goes, and the Minchat Shai goes here at length about this. Now, I want to just take you somewhere here that's new for all of us. But that really is also a fascinating area of inquiry. What we've seen, and in spite of the Rambam's great efforts, the Rambam writes in the eighth parak of Hilchot Sefer Torah, he says, I've seen that all of our Sefer Torah here are all different than each other, and they're all confused, and they're all wrong. Therefore, I'm going to write down how a Sefer Torah should be written based on, and what we ultimately know is the Rambam was using the Aleppo Codex, which was in Cairo at the time, as the model. And he writes down, if you look in Hilchot Sefer Torah, he writes down all the parashot ptuchot in every sefer, all the parashot stumot in every sefer, how to write Az Yashir, how to write Shirat Hazinu, all of that, how many lines lean between each sefer of a Torah, etc. And in spite of the Rambam's best efforts, reality is that there are Sifrei Torah throughout the Middle Ages, all through Europe, in learned communities, read in Batei Medrash of great people that differed from each other. And so there was an Englishman in the 18th century, he's not the only one to do this, Benjamin Kennicott, who actually did a tremendous service for us. He did an investigation of all the Sefer Torah he could get a hold of and to see how the spelling worked. And watch what happens. This is our page. Parenthetically, he also had access to the Samaritan Torah, and he showed how it differs from ours. And now you could see I raised the text from a mezuzot. Now watch what he does. He says, mezuzot. You see how it's spelled in the first one? Mem, Zayin, Zayin, Vav, Tav. That's the way our Sefer Torah written. This is in Vayam Shmua. Sorry, this is in Ve'ahavta. That's our Sefer Torah written. And he lists several Sefer Torah which are written that way. He has a code where all these numbers, this is how many he looked at. Then he has Mizuzot, double Malay. He has a whole bunch of Sefer Torah that are written that way. Then he has Mizuzat, the way Rashi prefers it, and he's got a bunch of Sefer Torah written that way. Which means, by the way, that Rashi was in very good company writing Mizuzat, as it were, Mem, Zayin, Vav, Zayin, Tav, and giving us an interpretation of it that says, here's how we know. By the way, this interpretation is not found in the Gemara. Here's how we know that you only write it on one of the doorposts based on the way that it's written. Rashi's in fine company. We have at least 10 different Sefer Torah that he was able to identify hundreds of years later around Europe that had this spelling. Which means, by the way, Rav Yosef's statement back in the Gemara, Anam lo beki'inan b'chaserot v'yeterot. We are not experts in what we call plene or defective, meaning full or empty, as it were, writing, meaning using letters as vowels or not. We're not experts in that, and you can see the evidence in front of you. By the way, take a look. Kennicott's work is, by the way, is online, available, free. Just put the name in, and you'll find it. If you need, I'll send you a link. And you can go through the entire Torah and see how many variants there are. Almost all of the variants are in issues like this, meaning Ktiv Maler Chaser. There are occasional other variants, including a very famous one that we talked about half a year ago, which is a pasuk in Parsha Truma, where it says, "Vnuati eight kol asher tzaveh." And Rashi on the spot, if you remember, says, Ve'et, and why is the Vav there? And everybody raised their hand, what are you talking about? There's no Vav. And the commentaries on Rashi and the Minchat Shai say, what are you talking about? There's no Vav there. And you open up Kennicott and you find that there's testimony to a number of Sefer Torah that had a Vav there. Now, what's the bottom line? What does this all tell us? That we have an amazing, almost unbelievable link of Mesorah. However, we have to remember that the Torah was given, to quote Professor Lyman, I love this line, is the Torah was given by God to the Jewish people, but the Jewish people passed it on to other Jewish people, meaning humans copied it. And one of the basic rules about human endeavor is people make mistakes, which means somewhere down the line, somebody made a copy and either added a vav or took a vav out or misplaced the vav earlier or later in the word. And we really cannot recall, and we cannot to recreate what the original thing was, but we do know based on all this testimony that it was that each one of these readings was regarded as a valid reading. Now, what would you do if you found a Sefer Torah that said in V'ahavta, in last week's Parsha, Mem Zayin Vav Tav? The answer is Rabbi Kamir and Pasul, and you take it to the Sofer. Why is that? Because the consensus of the Masorah as we practice it today is that it's written Mem Zayin Vav Tav. That's how we write it. Unlike Rashi, and unlike the way that it's written Vayam Shamal with two Vavs. What we took a look at today was one word in this week's parasha, mizuzot, which is written with two vavs, compared it to the way it's written in V'ahavta with one vav, took a look at Rashi and all of the literature around it and saw that although the issue may seem to us to be a cut and dried issue, which is either it's proper, it's improper, it's far more nuanced. There's far more interested and devoted scholarship to try to figure out what the original text is. And ultimately, at the end of the process, we do have a proper Masoretic reading, which we follow the halakha, but we're not ready to invalidate, certainly not, a Sefer Torah that sat in the Beit Midrash in Troyes, where Rashi read from it, or at least consulted it.